start with a case study. Famous Heinz dilemma. So a man's wife was once very, very sick, and no one can come up with a cure. Until one day, this one scientist came up with this new formula, and he was the only one who had this formula. He copyrighted it, he was the only one in the world. And his wife was dying. So he went over to the scientist, and he begged the scientist, "Can you please save my wife's life?" And the scientist said, "It's very simple, I'm a businessman. Okay, I'm charging $100,000 for this new cure." Now the man was very poor, he had very little money, and he tried as much as he could, tried to muster up as much money as he could. The most he could come up with was $10,000. Now, the interesting thing was that the amount of money that the medicine cost was only around $10,000. So the scientist wasn't going to lose anything if he just sold the guy this new cure for $10,000, saving his wife's life. The only problem is that the scientist was a very serious businessman. He said, "No. This is my medication. I came up with it. I'm charging $100,000. You get the money, you can save your wife's life. You don't get the money, she's going to die." So this guy was broken. He didn't know what to do. On the one hand, the guy was charging $100,000. On the other hand, this is his wife's life on the line. So he decided he's going to steal the medication. And the famous Heinz dilemma, the moral dilemma, is, was this morally correct? Was he allowed to steal in order to save his wife's life? What do you guys think? Who thinks by raising hands that this was inappropriate? I know his wife's life is on the line. That doesn't matter. You can never steal to save your life.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, granted that it was his wife that was dying, but like at the end of the day, like, it's not that I committed yisurin in order to, you know, perform mitzvah, I guess.
Okay, interesting. And who wants to argue on that?
Well, it's that the guy didn't lose anything that if you gave it up.
Interesting. So I gave you a very interesting case, which is that he's not losing money. Let's say he was losing that. Let's say he was losing. Let's say the guy wasn't going to pay. He wasn't going to leave the $10,000. He was going to steal to save his wife's life.
I think the value of human life outweighs the value of money.
So what's the principle? Where does that come from?
In the Shema, no? Well,
so you're talking about
Yeah.
So that's the big three. So we're going to get to that. So normally, the assumption is that, of course, you're allowed to do this, because nothing stands in the way of life. You're allowed to violate any aver in the Torah to save your life. Everyone will see it's not so simple, especially when it comes to stealing. But what Moshe is raising is a very interesting idea, which is that the guy's not losing. But let's say he was losing.
So there's a little bit more to go back and forth on.
Exactly. Now we have to kind of weigh the line. So it's kind of like Robin Hood. You know, Robin Hood would steal from the rich, save the poor. And we made that into a hero. Right? There's a whole, you know, fairy tale of Robin Hood. But this is the actual question, whether that's morally acceptable to steal from someone in order to save someone else. It could be that Robin Hood was doing something terrible and that he's the villain, not the rich guy. Although, it's not so simple, so we're going to have to discuss it. Now, these are some very halakha l'maaseh questions, because there has been halakhic shailos whether you're allowed to steal to save your life. Not only that, but the next step is, these are actually tshuvas, are you allowed to steal organs? Are you allowed to steal bone marrow to save a life? So, for example, let's say a person is the only match in the whole world for a bone marrow donation. This is not money, because anyone can, you know, steal money. Anyone has money. But if you are like the guy, the scientist who had the only cure, if you are the only match in the world, you are literally the only person that can save this person's life. So are you allowed to steal that person's bone marrow?
Like you cut them up and like...
So Moshe, you just had a bone marrow operation, but you don't have to cut the person up. They actually have ways of doing it now, where it used to be that you'd insert a needle right into the bone. Nowadays, you can take actually some medication which creates the activation of white blood cells, and you can actually just extract the necessary bone marrow from the blood itself. You don't have to do...
I think that case gets too complicated, though, because you're actually that person's actually losing something.
Interesting.
And he's going through his own SARS.
So say further. Exactly. So this is not a question of money. This is not stealing money. There's actually a really fascinating question, whether your body parts are considered to be mammon. Are your body parts considered to have monetary value?
I mean, Yeah, I would say yes.
You'd say yes. So some say yes.
American society puts a value.
So exactly. So that's arbitrary. That's an arbitrary value. I mean, we're talking about more halachic value. Can a body part have halachic status with mama?
Shove a kesa, kesa.
So there's a whole question of whether your body parts are considered shove a kesa. You can argue that your body parts have infinite value, that there's no price tag that you can put on your kidney. What?
If someone casts a shell and takes my arm off, we don't make him pay everything he has. We make him.
Ah! So Shai says, Ayin tachas ayin. So now there's a whole question. If you guys know the anthropocracy of Baba Kama, later Prakha Baba Kama talks about chavala. Now the question is, what are you repaying when you do chavala? Let's say I chop off your hand. I have to pay you. We assess how much you were worth beforehand and how much you're worth now. Now the question is, what am I actually paying you for? So there's three options, basically, when you do tashlumin, when you repay. One is that you're replacing something. So let's say I break your chair. I have to pay you because I have to replace your chair. Another way is repayment. Now I'm not replacing the chair, I'm repaying you the value. Shava kesa kesa. The monetary value of the chair. But, as many Rishonim discuss when it comes to Kabbalah, when I repay you for your hand, I'm not replacing your hand, because the money doesn't help you replace your hand. I'm also not repaying you for your hand, because your hand has an infinite value. There's no price tag you can put on the hand. No matter how much money I give you, you're still lacking a hand. But what I do give you is a knas. It's a penalty. It's basically an onish. To punish me for doing what I did to you, and to prevent other people from doing it in the future. So that there's kind of this guard around it. But there's no way of actually paying you, because your hand has no value, because it's beyond value. It's not that it doesn't have value, it's that it's priceless. There's no price tag you can put on it. So then if we say that, when it comes to stealing bone marrow or stealing kidney, let's say, you know, I go into a guy's room at night and I just take his kidney, and he's fine. But I saved my life because I got a new kidney. That's great, but how are you going to repay him? You can't. So when we talk about stealing to save your life, we have to kind of break it up into different categories of where you can repay, such as Robin Hood, stealing the money, and when you can't repay, such as stealing organs or stealing things which have no objective monetary value.
But if you steal something that's not going to cause them a loss, is that considered stealing?
So that's a good question. So that's kind of like, you know, one person gets hanah, but the other person is losing. So, you know, there's a whole sugya in Baba Kama where one person's getting hanah, but the other person losing. Let's say I sleep in a person's house, but he wasn't there. And there's no damage to his house, and he doesn't lose any money. Do I have to pay him? So I got hanah, but he didn't lose anything. So can you charge, is hanah a commodity? But there's more, because in these cases, you're invading the person's actual body. So there's tsar, potentially. Whenever you do an operation, let's say I take the guy's kidney. So Moshe was saying, there's tsar, there's pain there. And even if I take someone's bone marrow, that's something which I literally took from him. So even though you're saying that he's not losing, let's say I take a person's blood. Blood grows back.
Yeah.
But even so, I still took something which was his. So am I, for example, paying him for what he lost or for what I gained? And furthermore, does it have to be something which he's losing and there's like pain in the fact he lost it? Or he's losing blood, it's his, but he's going to get more. Is that, can I make that cheshbon? So those are all kind of nuances which you have to describe when it comes to gezel and chavala and what exactly the machayev is. Shai.
We could also say that there's a third category in which you steal organs that were already removed.
You steal?
Organs that were already removed.
So that's really, very good. So that would be a third category, because once again, now you're not doing the invasive aspect, and now you're not going into another person's body, and you now can say the same idea that it has no monetary value. So now you'd weigh that aspect. Because you're taking away the tsar component, and you're taking away the it belongs to someone's body, but still might not have any monetary value.
What's the part of it that we're really worried about?
Exactly. So that's an interesting option when you're trying to, like, kind of, you know, pinpoint the exact chiluk and where we're making the chiluk. Is it in the invasive aspect, is it the tsar, or is it the fact that we can't give a monetary value to an organ? I like that. Okay. So now that we've raised the question, we're going to revisit the Gemara, which we have done many times, because this will be the starting point of this entire sugya. And we go back to our original Gemara in Sanhedrin Ayin Gimel. Aleph, your first source. So the Gemara says, Minayin l'oros chaveir shehu tova benar ochaya goroso listen bungalow. So how do you know if a person is drowning in a river, or being attacked by a wild animal, or bandits are attacking him, shehu chayv to save him? So where do we know? So tam alam lo sama dam recha. We've seen this many times. the principle of Lo Sama Adam Re'acha, do not stand idly by when your friend is in danger. Do we learn that from this source? We have another source. How we know that you have to return a person's lost body when he's in danger? That you have to chiyav of hashavas aveda for a person's life as well. So if we would have only learned it from hashavas aveda, I would think that's limited to a scenario where you're saving him yourself. To work hard to try to save him, to hire someone else to save him, I would think you're not chayiv. So kamash malan, that you are. So we've seen this gemara many times, and the question we've asked every single time is, how far did the chayiv go? We have these two principles, hashavas aveda, returning a person's life, and lo sama adam re'acha, do not stand idly by. Now the question which we need to ask is, how far did that chayiv go? Because hashavas aveda, you don't need to spend money generally to return a person's lost object. Why? Because if it was your lost object, you wouldn't want to lose money to get your lost object. You wouldn't lose money. So why should you have to lose money here? Why should I have to lose money to save your object? My chassis. But the question is, number one, does that principle apply by saving a life? Because I would spend a lot of money to save my own life. Number two is, lo sama adam re'acha, what does that teach us? So that's going to be the question. How far did it go? So, what do you guys think? Do you guys think that you'd be chayav to spend money to save someone's life?
Chayav to spend... I think so.
I think, yeah, but then the person should be chayav to pay.
Ah, so why?
I think yes.
Because, I mean, you know, you did it. You did something for him. You're like a shliach. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, the shliach never uses his own money for something.
I like that a lot. I like also the fact that you went into the shliach aspect, because we have to discuss what the nature of the chiv to pay back is. So, one option is to say, no, that l'sam adam re'acha is expansive, and hashavas aveda might also be expansive, and you have to, you're chayv to pay money, and you don't have to pay back. Yeah?
Yeah, but it's a mitzvah on him to save your life also, so Why should you pay him back for something he was obligated to do?
Why should you pay him back
for something that he was obligated to do?
Very good. So you're saying that this is a mitzvah. He had a chiyuv. So that's what I just said. I mean, the chiyuv of Losan Derech is expensive. He had a chiyuv to pay to save his life. You don't have to pay him back.
Yeah.
The Moshe is saying like this. He's saying, well, we can build in many ways. Let's start very simple. Okay? Why should you have to pay back? The reason you should have to pay back is, number one, the chiyuv of Lo Sama Adam Re'acha might be very limited. The smaller, because you're saying this is a big chiyuv, the smaller we think the chiyuv is, the chiyuv might be, like Moshe said, just to kind of, I'm your shliach. I'm just kind of, you know, helping you out. I'm, you know, representing you, but I'm not losing any money. The chiyuv was never to spend money. The chiyuv was just to save your life. That's all I'm doing. The second step is my chazas. Even if we think you do have a chiyuv to spend money, you also have a chiyuv to spend money to save your own life. So now we have two people who are chayiv to save your life. The guy who's saving you and the guy who's being saved. Now, why should the guy who's saving you have to lose money? You have money too. Why should I mean, if I'm the one saving you and I'm looking at the scenario saying, listen, I love you, I want to save your life, okay? You have to wear chakmocha, I'm all in. But you have money. You have money in your bank account. I have money in my bank account. You're the one who needs to be saved. I'm going to save you, but I shouldn't be the one losing out. So we can think of this as a very technical way, which is like preventing people from backing out and saying, I don't want to save you because, you know, I'm going to lose money. We can think of more fundamental as my chazas, meaning you also have a chiyuv to save your life. So you have to be the one to spend the money. Now, the next question is going to be, which Moshe kind of alluded to, which is, what's the nature of the money that I'm giving you? Because if you're chayav to pay me back, what's the nature of the chiyuv hashava? So you could say, the nature of the chiyuv hashava is kind of like, you can say very simple, it's shliach, like, you know, there was, really, you're just spending your own money. I'm physically spending your money, and you're just kind of giving it back to me. But you can think of it more as a loan. As there's no chiyuv to spend money, there's only chiyuv to lend the nitzal, to lend the person that I'm saving money, and then he'll pay me back. So imagine you have a guy who's drowning in the river. I spend money, I hire a lifeguard, the guy saves his life. what did I really do? I really lent you the money to hire the lifeguard. And now you're going to just pay me back. But another way of thinking of it is that, no, I had a chiyuv to spend money to save your life. And I spent money to save your life. But because of my chazos, because, listen, why should I be the one to spend money? Now there's this new chiyuv, this chiddush, this kind of new creation, where you now have a chiyuv to spend money to pay me back. It's not like I lent you money and you're paying me back. It's that I spent money on you, and now there's a separate new chiyuv where you're going to pay me back the amount that I paid you. Now, what's a nafkamina? One second. What's the major nafkamina? Major nafkamina is how we understand the interim, because a milveh has a lot of very interesting halachos. For example, milveh lo tzadnina, milveh lav lo tzadnina. We have a whole question of shibudu d'oraisa, shibudu lav d'oraisa. All these interesting, you know, chiyuvim and chilukim when it comes to milveh, where if we're talking about this new chiyuv, you wouldn't necessarily be able to talk about it. Because the connection between the malveh and the milveh, the malveh and the money which he lends the loveh, is a very interesting relationship. Does he still have a connection to the money? Is he able to just collect the money? Is he able to sell the chov? But if it's a new creation, a new chov, then it's not his money to talk about. He has no connection to that money. So halachically, you know, we're going to think of this as a completely different category if we're thinking of this as a malveh to loveh, versus if we're thinking of this as a new chiyuv, versus like Moshe said, we're thinking of this more of like a shliach.
So, do we have any other examples where you'd be chayav to pay money for a mitzvah? I'm just thinking, is there like a precedent for this?
So that's a very good question. So first of all, in general, you're not supposed to get paid for mitzvahs, and he's not getting paid for mitzvah. He's getting paid back for mitzvah.
Right.
To answer your question, we're going to get to that hopefully by the end of this year. In general, you have to pay for mitzvos. You do not get reimbursed. Hashavas Aveda is an exception. Hashavas Aveda is a very interesting halacha where you do not have to spend money for it.
Otherwise, people wouldn't do it.
So that's the question. The question is why? Is it, like I said, practically, like you just said, to prevent people from saying, I don't want to do this? Is it more fundamental because of my chazas? Because why should I have to spend money to save your object? You also, you know, or is it more that why should I spend money? I wouldn't do this for my own object. So why should I do it for yours? So it is an exception to the rule, and it's not a normal case. So very good question. So we'll get to that at the end.
I don't understand why there's an incentive specifically only for Shabbat Avida. Like why like
the incentive would be not for Shabbat Avida, but for saving life.
Oh, okay, fine.
Very good question, but that would be, you'll see in the Gemara where it talks about specifically saving life. But just a couple of quick marmakomas to show you this idea of paying back. If you look at source number 2, the Rashi says, "V'hanitzel chayv l'thor l'matzel ma'ashehotzi. De'in adam chiv l'hatzel nevesh chavir b'mono, hecha de'islay m'mona l'nitzel." So he uses the principle of Maichaz. He says that the nitzel has to pay back if he has money. Which means that, why if he has money? Because if I have money, why should you have to spend money to save my life? I should have to be paying you back. So the Rashi is basically saying that when you spend money to save me, just like Moshe said, that I have to pay back. And if you look at the Ad Ramah, look at the second line, he limits the principle of Lo Sama Adam Riacha. Not because of my chazi, he says that you have to pay back because Lo Sama Adam Riacha does not teach you that you're chayav to spend money. It only teaches you that you're chayav to hire someone. He says, De'adkan, look at the bold, De'adkan lo chayav rachmana ela lemitrach badure basar agire avo la'atzuli b'mamona lo. HaKadosh Baruch, I mean, the Gemara says that if I only had Hashavas Aveda, I would think you have to do it yourself. Well, some of the Amarecha teaches you even have to hire someone else. What does the Yadrama say? He says that's all the Gemara says. That the Chiddush is you have to hire someone else, but not that you have to spend money. If it would have taught, well, why the teacher you have to spend money, would have said, if I only had Hashavas Aveda, I would think that you didn't have to spend money, Kamash Mal, you have to spend money. So he's being very medayik, he's saying the Gemara is teaching you that you only have to help the person be saved, you do not have to lose anything or lose any money by doing so.
Meaning use your time instead
use
of...
Use your time,
money.
Your effort, you lend him money because you have to spend money to save him, but you don't have to lose money. The guy has to pay back. Okay. So, if you look at source number 8, we'll now go on to a possible proof. Now the question is, do we have any proofs that you are not chayav to spend money, or that, put it more correctly, that you have a chayav, that the guy has a chayav to pay you back after you spent the money to save a person's life? So very interesting Gemara. Look at source number 8. The Amara, Rodev Shahaya Rodev Acharir. So we have a case of Rodev. A person is trying to kill another man. Vishivar Sakilim, and the Rodev breaks some objects along the way. Bein Shan Ludev, Bein Shakol Adam, Pater. So my time of Machai Ben Afshu. So very interesting principle, that if a Rodev, let's say a person is trying to kill someone, and he, as he's running to kill the person, he breaks someone's window. He's not chayav to pay back. Why? Because it's chayav ben afshu. Now we're not going to get into the whole sugya, but mistama, this is working midin kimlo midrabanei. Now does anyone know what the principle of kimlo midrabanei is?
You get punished the worst punishment.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that punishment. If you are chayav the worst punishment, you are not chayav to pay the lesser one. Now the question is why? So there's a couple different reasons why you can think of. Number one is that Beis Din can only be mechayav you one thing. So when Beis Din looks at this act, they have to decide, what is this act? Is this an act of murder? Or is this an act of nezek? So we're going to look at it, we're going to define it as the worst one to give you a bigger kapara. Another way of saying it is that Beis Din can give you one punishment that can accomplish both onshin. So if they punish you, let's say you're chayiv misa, and you're also chayiv to pay money. By getting the chayiv misa, you're not ignoring the chayiv to pay mamon, but you're kind of getting both. So it's kind of this one overwhelming punishment which embodies everything else. Okay? A third way of saying it is not that, like the first one, which is that Beis Din can only define it one way, but that Beis Din is only able to give you one punishment. So you kind of have two chiyuvim, but you're only getting one of them. Now what's nafkami? Nafkami is that the second chiyuv is still there. So there's the whole question, are you able to, on your own, decide that I want to pay back? Are you mekayim the chiyuv? Like lifnei mishrus hadin, you know, in terms of, you know, when it comes to the cheshbon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is there actually chiyuv still there that I can pay back and kind of, you know, wipe the slate clean? So according to this last one, the chiyuv is still there, Beis Din just isn't mekayim me. So I would be able to do it. So it's very interesting, because Rashi, you know, in Shas, kind of sometimes says that you could still pay back, and the question is why? If you think that Beis Din only identifying one chiyuv, defining it one way, or Beis Din is giving you both chiyuvim, but through one punishment, there is no other way. You know, the chiyuv moment is non-existent. But if Beis Din is just unable to give you two punishments, or just doesn't, that chiyuv is still hanging around there, and then you can still be mekayem. So, mistama, that's the din. We're not going to get into the whole sukkah here, but mistama, the guy is chayiv misa because he's a rodef. That gets back into our second shir of what the nature of rodef is. Is he chayiv misa? Is it midin hatzola? Is it, you know, saving the rodef himself from doing this terrible avera? But mischayiv benafsho, so we're going to say he's not chayiv to pay the money. But then the Gemara says something very interesting. It says, v'nirdef v'shivar sakelim. Let's say the nirdef, the guy who's being chased by the rodef. So he's being attacked. So then let's say he breaks the kelim. So shall rodev pater shall kol adam chay. So if he breaks over the rodev, let's say the rodev is, you know, attacking someone in his own house. So the nirdaf breaks the guy's window. The rodev was attacking him. He doesn't care about his own life because the nirdaf can kill the rodev. So if he doesn't care about his own life, he doesn't care about his things either, and he's kind of given up, whether it's midin hefker, whether it's, you know, whatever is working through, it doesn't like that. But let's say I'm running away from the rodev, and I break someone's window while saving my own life. So I still kind of spent money, I kind of, you know, caused someone damage to save my life. So the Gemara says that I'm chayv. That I'm chayv. I have to pay back. So now, what does it seem? It seems that you're chayv to pay back. That if you steal to save your life, that if you, let's say someone had to spend money to save your life, but regardless of the fact that he was chayav to save you, you have to pay back. And that's exactly what the Rosh says. He says something very interesting, though, which we'll have to discuss. He says, if you look at source number 11, v'hanitzo chayav l'flora l'matzal ma'asha hotzi. De'in adem chayav l'hatzal nefesh chaver b'mono, heichad de'islam b'mono l'nitzo. So that's what we read before, that the nitzol has to, when, let's say I spend money to save your life, you have to pay me back. Then he brings our Gemara right here. It says, "Kamar l'kaman nirdaf shashivar sakilim shalrodev pater shakol adam chayiv." So what's his svara? The im hayim chayiv v'hatzil shnirdaf b'mamono. If let's say a person really is chayiv to spend money and save someone's life, and you didn't have to pay back, so then he says, "Why?" He says, "Im kin yiftur mishavir asakilim." Then if the nirdaf would have broken the kelim, then he wouldn't have to pay back. Why? Shari mamon chavir mechuyev lahatzil, because the mamon, the guy's chayiv to spend money to save you, and if he's chayiv to spend money to save you, shvaram kedilah. So then he was allowed to do this. So if you notice, the Rush adds a very big chiddush. He says, he kind of jumps a step. He says that, listen, you are not chayiv to spend money to save someone's life. How do I know? Because if you were chayiv to spend money to save someone's life, then if someone would have broken your kelim to save their life, they wouldn't be, have to pay back. Why? Because the chiv would have gone on the mamon. If the chiv went on the mamon, then you wouldn't be chayiv to pay back. Now, what was the major jump? The major jump is like this. The Rush assumes that if you are chayiv to spend money, your money is also chayiv to save the person's life. Meaning that, let's say I have a chiv to save your life, and I have a chiv to spend money to save your life, that means that my money now is at your will, because you are basically able to take my money to save your life. Why? Because the chiv on me extends to my money. Now we're going to talk about that trip, yeah.
So, but I think that's making a bigger jump, because that person's not there. He doesn't know.
Okay, very good. So you skip to the rising. We'll get to that in a minute. Very good.
According to that logic, wouldn't you be able to steal someone's money to give to them?
Hmm?
According to that logic, you should be able to steal money to give to them.
So good, we're not going to, first of all, just to clarify, the Rush is saying this is not true.
Oh.
Right? He's saying specifically it's not true. But no, what you're saying though is that in general, if you have a chiyuv, it should extend to your money. So we can talk about different chiyuv, meaning a chov asagavra, a chester shel chov, meaning an objective chov, a chov which, you know, other people have a right to kind of interfere with. When it comes to a person's life on the line, you can hear how that could be a very big difference between that and the chiv tzedakah.
A chiv is a
chiv. No. So granted, a chiv is a chiv, but we can kind of create different. We can create a hierarchy in terms of how strong the chov is and how necessary it is for other people to interfere in order to collect the chov. So your point is very well taken. Meaning, once you have a chiv, how far does it extend? Does it always extend? But there's another question, which is: are you able to force people to do mitzvos? And for certain mitzvos, we say yes. For certain mitzvos, we say no. So Gemar talks about, you know, giving someone malchus to shake a lulav. Now, is that only, can only Bezin do that? Or can anyone in the street go and say, you know, I'm going to, you know, whack you until you shake lulav? And there's a machlokas between the sivas and the ktzos, whether that's only Din and Bezin, or anyone can be Mekai and Bezin in that case, and kind of, you know, act as Bezin. So if you want to extend that to stop, the question is, which mitzvos would people be able to kind of force other people to keep us? It's a very good question. But the first step would be whether or not the chiyuv extends to the moment in the first place. The Rosh assumes yes, but we don't have to say it. Now, what's the svara? Why would the chiyuv extend to your mamon? Svara is it's a very good svara, because your money is an extension of you. Well, we'll talk about this more next week, but your money is an extension of you. So if you are chayiv to save someone's life, perhaps your money is also chayiv to save that person's life as well. Or you can take a different direction, which is that if you're chayiv to spend money to save someone's life, maybe your money is also chayiv now because of the chiyuv mamon.
I mean, I would say that money is not really connected to you necessarily, because, like, you know, on the other stream, the money doesn't go down with you, you know?
Good. So we're going to have to create different levels of self, because clearly your money is not you, but the question is how connected to you is your money? And we're going to have to build that very well next week, because that's going to be a very big theme in terms of what the relationship between you and your money is. Why do you own the shirt you're wearing? How connected are your things to you? Where do you break off you? Meaning, how connected is your body to you? You know, if you're a soul, then where do we break off between you and your things, and between you and your body, and between you and... Meaning, we're going to have to create that hierarchy. But it's a very good question in terms of identification of self, in terms of what's you? What's considered an extension of you? I mean, all of Klal Yisrael, you know, can theoretically, where do we stop? Where do you stop? So it's a very interesting question. So if you look at source number 14, the Meiri rejects the Rosh's assumption. The Meiri says that, look at source number 14, She'afa pisha asra lahatzil asma b'mamon chavero, dafka shlomi da'as ha'bayim. Aval b'aylam asmin chayvim lahatzil chavero. The kol shalos came over mishmo samadem yachad. So he says, very interesting. He says, the chiyuv is on the person, but not the money. So he says like this. He says that you're chayav to spend money to save a person's life, but they can't take it from you. But even so, you still have a chiyuv to give them the money. So he's basically creating that stop between the chiyuv on the person and the chiyuv on the mamon. So like Shai was saying, in terms of staka, there would be no chiyuv on the money, and the chiyuv would only be on the person. So you can bracket there. But you can take a step further and go like Moshe said, which is the next shita, it's number 17, the shita Kubeses, quotes the Ravid, who says that why is it that the person is chayv to pay back here? Not because like the Rush, that there's no, that you're always chayv to pay back. And not like the Meiri, that the chiyuv is on the person and not the money, and therefore since he stole, he took the money without the person giving it to him, that's still considered stealing. But, like Moshe said, the chiyuv of Olam HaMariach does extend to the money, but only when the person is there, witnessing the act. So you look very interesting. He asked the question. He says, Adam chayiv lahatzav momen chaveiro, source number 17. A person is chayiv to spend money to save a person's life. The imza chayiv latzil b'mona matam asur la'adam lahatzav la'atzamo b'mona chaveiro. So then why is it asur? Why does he have to pay back? Like the Gemara says. So then he says, no, you're only chayv to spend money when the person's there. You see, the Gemara on the Sanhedrin Daf on Gimel is talking about a case where you're witnessing people. They're drowning, they're being attacked by lions. So in that case, you have to proactively go and save a person's life, even spend money. But what about a case where you're not there and the person needs your money to save his life? Can he steal? No. Why? Because the nature of Lusama Dabriacha is a reactive chiv. It's responsive. It's when I see you in danger, I know how chiv to spend money to save you. If I don't see you, though, granted, you know, we should always try to save your life, but there's no chiv on the money. My belongings don't now belong to you in a way that you can just take them to save your life. And there's a very interesting proof that I think you can use. Is the Gemara number 18, the Gemara by Matiyah, Daf Samach Bezim and Aleph. Very interesting Gemara, we've seen this before. The Gemara of Rabbi Kiva ben Batura. So the Gemara brings a case of two people who are walking in the desert, and only one of them have a flask of water. And if that person drinks the flask of water, he will survive. But if he shares it with the person next to him, they will both die. And the Gemara says something fascinating. It brings the opinion of Ben Petura, which says that they should both drink it and die. Of course, that's where Rabbi Kiva came along and said, no, don't worry, the person who has the water, he can drink it. Now the question is, what's going on? Ben Petura says they should both drink it? So if you look very interestingly, the Lashon Ben Petura, line number 2, Darash Ben Petura, Mutav sheyishtu shnei v'yamutu v'al yira echameham v'misasur shachaveiro. Better they both die than one person sees his friend die. Now many Rishonim, many of the poskim discuss how Ben Petura is working within Losama Damriacha. And he's saying that because of Losama Damriacha, you cannot drink the water. The you have a chiyuv to save that person's life, and even though we're not going to get into the sugya right now because it'll take a lot of time, we're going to do it later on in the year. But even though you're passive and you're not actively killing him, you are responsible for his death, and you're chayv because of Osama Damriacha. But what's something very interesting that he says? What's his lasha? He says, better that you should both al yira echa mehem misasha chadera. The very nature of Osama Damriacha, he's using the lasha of not seeing the person who's in front of you in danger. Which would go right along with this Ravid, which said that the whole nature of the Samadhi Recha is only when you see the person in front of you. But like Moshe said, when the person's not there, and he's not in front of you to see it, there might not be a Chilo Samadhi Recha.
I think this Gemara is like a very unique case where it's also on you. Like, I don't think this is something you can compare to different cases we've spoken about so far.
Yeah, so very good. The case itself in the Gemara is going to be an exception and requires a whole discussion. But if we're using the principle of Osama Damriacha, then we can activate the concept that has to be used, being there as a presence. You can reject it for many reasons. You can reject it and say that, listen, like he's not talking about, you know, you're using a diak in the terms of seeing the person. You don't have to. But just the fact that many Rishonim talk about Osama Damriacha, and Ben Petura is so careful to use the lashon of you witnessing this person's death, kind of brings forth the principle of the Raya, which is that Osama al-Marech is only when you are there witnessing the actual danger itself. But there are many reasons you could reject it. But one is, like you're saying, which is that you know, he's much more involved in this case. Last reason to reject the possibility of you being chayiv to spend money to save the person's life is that perhaps the reason that you're not chayiv to spend money is because Losam al-Merecha is more of a chiv on the klal. Like, we have principles in general where the chiv is on the klal rather than the individual. So, for example, if I am in dire need of money to save my life, there's no one single individual who's chayiv to spend money to save my life. There's a chiyuv on the klal. Meaning, let's say, you know, there's 20 people who can save my life. Can I just take money from any one of them? Or maybe, if I take money from one of them, one of the other can say, why take it from me? Take it from another guy. Meaning, why me? Why am I the person who's chayiv? Maybe, you know, everyone's chayiv. For example, community is chiyuv to have doctors and to provide money for the poor, have a chevra kadisha. But no single individual is chayiv to be a doctor or to be part of the chevra kadisha. There's kind of these generic klali type of chiyuvim. So if we think that losamad is more of a klali chiyuv, then we can argue that no single person is chayiv to spend the money. And therefore, when this person took money to save his life in the Gemara, perhaps the guy can argue, the owner can argue, that listen, that's great, but my chazos, so why should I be the person that you stole from? Therefore, you have to pay back. Now the question is, and this is where it gets very interesting, which is that, what if you can't pay back?
Well, it depends on, I mean, I guess we're talking post-biblical times, because back then, you couldn't pay back, you'd get sold into slavery, but
okay, true.
Nowadays, I don't know.
Well, back then, you'd get sold into slavery when you stole. But here, let's say, let's give it more friendly case. Let's say a person, no, so we're not going to steal yet. Let's say a person, I gave you money to save your life. All right, so you were drowning, I hired a lifeguard. I spent money on you, but you can't pay back. So the question is, what happens in that case? Let's say better. Do I have to spend money on you to save your life if I know you're not going to be able to pay me back?
I think that's called emotional insurance of debt.
So you think that you would not be chayiv to, but you could. Mingo bichasa. Shall we do? Guy can't pay back. You have to spend money to save his life. It's a tough one. Okay?
So
if you think that you never have to pay back, then this is a non-starter. Of course the guy has to spend money because the guy never has to pay back. But if you think the guy does have to pay back, then it depends. It depends on what we said earlier. If you think that we're limiting Losam al-Merecha, and that you never have to spend money to save a person's life, then no, you wouldn't have to do it. And like Moshe said, it would be kind of a chassid, with the Mishra Sadin, that if a person wants to, he could, but you never have to spend money to save a person's life. But if you think the whole swara of why you're not chayiv to spend money is because of my chazos, if you think that really, of course, you're chayiv to spend money to save a person's life, Losam al-Merecha, but come on, this guy has money. Why should I have to spend my money to save a person's life? He has his own money. In this case, he doesn't have his own money. So in this case, my chazus would not apply. And since in this case my chazus would not apply, therefore, of course, you would have to spend the money. So this is the machlokas. You have, first of all, you have number 19. You have the Shul Chavos Yair, who says, after Lomar, she'ino mechayiv lahaschir, mishelo im yodei she'in lechaver lahaschir, lo dulo Rav Satora, Rak Litroch Avora. So he's limiting Losam al-Merecha. He's saying that the only chiyuv Losam al-Merecha is to try to save the person's life, but not to spend money. But then you have the Rush, who says, look at that, and he says, Hecha de Is, the end of the source number 21, Hecha de Is Leimon al-Nitzal, therefore in that case you would save the person's life. And if you look at the Torah Shulchan Aruch, he says, which in all these cases are alluding to the fact that the only time that the person's chayiv to pay back is when the person has money. Because then we say, my chazas. But if the person doesn't have money, then you can't use the principle of my chazas. If the person doesn't have money, then of course you have to spend money. Meaning, the question, what's the default? Is the default that you don't have to spend money and therefore, of course, he has to pay back? Well, the fault is you do have to spend money, And the default is you'd always have to try to save the person's life, but when the guy himself has money, why should you be the one spending? He should have to be the one spending, so he has to pay you back. When he doesn't have money, he no longer has to pay you back. But here's a fascinating question. What if he didn't have money when you saved him, but he got money later on?
It's like yesh.
What?
It's like he had someone to yesh, kind of like you were foregone the money at that time.
Ah, very good. So that's going to be the question. Well, you're putting more in terms of the person who's spending the money, his mindset. We can kind of make it interesting, which is like this. Let's say, at the moment when the person was saving the guy who's drowning, the guy who's drowning had no money and he knew. Later on, 2 years later, the guy won the lottery, got $1 million. Does he have to pay you back? Now the question is like this. What was the nature of the money that I spent to save you? If it was a loan, and I lent you money, then I know you couldn't pay me back now, but listen, you know, eventually you'll pay me back whenever you pay me back. So it kind of lent you the money. If, like Moshe was saying, there's a loan, but like I kind of was being Aish, then the question is that real mechila? Or do I just say, like, listen, hold on to the chov, whenever you pay me back, pay me back. It would be more of a stipulation you put down. But we could say like this. Perhaps if at the Shas Hatzolah, the guy didn't have any money to pay me back, then it turns into a gift. Meaning, the only time that he has to pay you back is when he has money at the Shas Hatzolah. If he doesn't have money at the Shas Hatzolah, it turns into a gift. Or, if we want to go even further, we can say that there's always a chiyuv to spend money to save a person's life. When is there not a chiyuv? When does he have to pay me back? Why does he have to pay me back? Like we just said, because of my chazas. Because why should I spend money when he has money? But in this case, he doesn't have money. So in this case, if we think that this is not a loan, but I'm giving him money, like we said earlier, that there is a new chov to return the money afterwards because of my chazas, in this case, there is no new chov created. So it's always a matana, it's always a gift. I'm always just chayv to give him money because of Hatzolah. No connections to me. There's always that a new chiyuv to create it to then return money to me because of my chazas. Because why should I have to spend my money to save his life when he has his own money? But in this case, he didn't have his own money. And since in this case he didn't have his own money, there was no new chiyuv created. So when he gets the money later, it doesn't matter. At the Shas Hatzolah, there's no money. And that's exactly, if you look at the Shem Marash Dam, he equates this to the case of Peah, where a person is really poor and he collects, Shech and Peah, that there's a machlokas in the Gemara whether when he gets back home does he have to return the money that he collected. And the Rabbanon say no. Why? Because at the Shas Halakicha, the moment that he took the Shech and Peah, he was nani. Granted, later on, he has his money now, but at that moment, he was not. So he equates it to that concept of the Shah. But according to what we're saying, in terms of the idea of my chazas, if we take it really far, that'll be perfect. There'll be no chiv to return. So now the question is going to be as follows. The question is going to be, we'll finish very quickly. The question is as follows. Granted, until now, we talked about the concept of returning if you're chayv to pay. And we asked, are you allowed to steal to save your life? But really, this should not even be a starter. Because back to how we originally started, this whole question shouldn't even get off the ground. Because we have a principle that you are allowed to do anything to save your life except for the big three. So even if you are chayv, let's say the person is chayv to spend money to save your life. Let's say he's not chayv to spend money to save your life. Whatever you say, no matter how you say it, it shouldn't matter. Because this is stealing. And we know the big three are murdering, avodah zarah, and gilui raos, not stealing. So to save your life, you should of course be able to steal. Whether you have to pay back, not pay back, that's a different question. To save your life, you should for sure be able to steal. So, seemingly, this whole discussion is not even a starter. However, something very strange happens. we have throughout Shas many cases where it seems that you're not allowed to still save your life. And halacha l'maisa, there are certain achronim who seem to even paskan that way. And the question which we're going to have to delve into is why. Now, just to give you the most famous case, and we'll end today. The most famous case is the Gemara Baba Kama, Daf Samach Amid Beis. The Gemara is discussing the case of David HaMelech. Now, David HaMelech is attacking the Plishtim. And the Plishtim are hiding in Jewish fields. And David HaMelech has a question. Is he allowed to burn down the fields in order to save the lives of all of his soldiers who are going to have to attack the Plishtim and perhaps die if they go to war? So he sends the question to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin say as follows. They say, Aser, if you read the Gemara is source number 30. So Shokhali sent back to him, and they answered, Aser lahasil asma b'mulun chavir. It's Aser to steal in order to save your life. Now they ended up saying, for you it's mutter because you're a king, and the king has rights to all the lands in the kingdom, and therefore you're allowed to do it, but it's Aser. Now Tosos immediately says, He qualifies this immediately. He says, don't worry, it doesn't mean it's usher to steal. It means the whole question to begin with was Ibala Ichaim Vlashalim ki shahatsu asma mitnebuch nefesh. No, of course you're allowed to steal save your life. The only question is, do you have to pay back? And that's why the Sanhedrin said, normally you do have to pay back, but you're a king, so you don't have to pay back. But Rashi, if you look at verse number 34, Rashi says, he just kind of doesn't qualify at all. It says it's usher to steal, save your life, and the Binyan Siyan paskins this way. Binyan Siyan quotes Rashi and says, you're not allowed to steal, save your life. And this seems crazy. And everyone talks about this. And the big question which we're going to ask, which we're going to really delve into next week and kind of, you know, go throughout all these different Gemaras and Shas and kind of explore the different Svaras and ideas on why you want to be able to steal and save your life. That we're going to discuss next week.
But we haven't really